Davis, myself, Representative Bundy, Representative Toohey, Representative Bryce present. We do have a quorum. On today's calendar, and in this order, we will hear SB 123, post-secondary ed programs, HB 205, street gang activities, HB 281, AHFC transfers to the general fund, HB 281, financing, repair, and rehabilitation of UA buildings, SB 88, charter schools, and House Bill 119, exempt schools from certain DEC fees, and Senate Bill 58, use of the title industrial hygienist. We'll also be hearing confirmation on, doing confirmation hearings on the Board of Nursing, and that's the order of activity. SB 123, post-secondary ed. We have Dr. McCormick with us, and Dr. McCormick, if you would join us at the table, Representative Toohey.
Mr. Chairman, may I remind everybody, including our illustrious committee, that we have to go back and forth at 5:30.
So we will be out of here at 5 o'clock.
Pontificating, please. Nobody.
Representative Bryce, have you received the message from Representative Toohey?
Speak for yourself, Mr. Chair.
Terse reply from the left hand
side. Not at all. Inaccurate.
And if we may go on with Mr. McCormick. Dr. McCormick, sir.
Chairman Bundy, Chairman Toohey, members of the committee. I'll make this very brief. Senate Bill 123, you can see from the attachment, is basically the same bill that you passed out, House Bill 257, with two notable exceptions. The loan limits as it applies to career school programs was modified to allow for a $6,500 annual maximum for programs that are 30 or more weeks in length, which is the standard definition of a year in length, $4,500 maximum for those that are less than 30 but more than 20 weeks, and a $3,000 maximum for those that are less than 20 but at least 10 weeks in length. In the House version, you had a total maximum loan eligibility of $79,000. The Senate modified that to $60,000. And as a point of reference, the $60,000 does represent about a 26% increase over the current maximums in the current law. In the Senate version, they deny loans to individuals incarcerated full-time. In the House version, you provided FAR loans for incarcerated individuals that were scheduled for release within 2 months. I would recommend the committee embrace the Senate bill and pass the bill on.
Thank you. Let the record reflect that Representative Vesey has joined us. Questions for Dr. McCormick? As he indicated, we heard this very same bill earlier. This is just the Senate vehicle that has come over. Representative Toohey.
Thank you. I have one question. The only communication I had, my office had, was from, in fact, two, from people that felt that they were not going to be able to get loans for trade schools because they were less than 6 months. How do we address that? Because sometimes these...
We address that. If you go back to the original House version, we were proposing originally that those programs that were 1 year in length remain at $5,500. And those that were less than 9 months in length be dropped to $4,000. The Senate version came back with a compromise that actually improves the situation with regard to trade schools. As you see, those programs that are a year in length would be $6,500, which is $1,000 more than they now receive. Those that are 20 to 30 hours in length would be $4,500, which is $500 more than the House version, and then those that are less than 20 but at least 10 weeks in length would be $3,000 a year.
Thank you. Thank
Representative
you,
Easy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would you comment on how many of our vocational programs or trade school programs are less than 6 months in length?
Approximately, I would say 70 to 80% of the programs are. They run a year to less to 6 months. A year to 6 months is the standard length of most programs.
How many are less than 6 months? That's the dividing line here.
I think less than 6 months is probably no more than 30%. It's a small number.
And
maybe
in term,
10 to 15
in terms
schools.
Of, that's in terms of programs, if we'd break it down into student classroom hours or student learning hours, I mean.
It's not very many students. Typically, a small school like that doesn't enroll more than 10 to 20 students a term. They're very small operations.
Representative Bryce.
So, in other words, something like a beauty school would no longer be eligible?
No, under this, everyone would be eligible that currently are eligible. It would be just for differing amounts. Currently, they're all eligible for the same amount, irregardless of the length of the program.
That's right.
We are simply taking into account the length of the program in what we propose here.
Representative Rice.
Can we go ahead and move this along?
Are there further questions? Anybody here who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 123? Hearing none, we'll close public testimony and the wish of the committee. Representative Bryce.
I move SB 123 with individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, Senate Bill 123 has been moved from the HES committee. That brings us to, thank you, Mr. McCarn. House Bill 205, Street Gang Activity, and Margot Knuth's with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Margot Knuth. I'm with the Criminal Division of the Department of Law, and at our last meeting, the issue had come up whether we could include in this bill a provision for those juveniles who have run away from home, whereby their parents would not be liable for acts committed by that child as part of a street gang. And I did prepare an amendment, which I believe is a part of everybody's materials. It's paragraph to be added at page 2, line 1 of the bill. And this appears in at least one and I think two other bills that have gone through this session. In other contexts.
Questions for Ms. Knuth?
I'd like to move this amendment. Mr.
Chairman. Okay, we'll call this amendment number one that we have in front of us, page 2, line 1, getting however very apparent of a minor. Further discussion of the amendment? Are there any objections to the amendment?
Oh, I just need a little longer hope, please.
Okay. Representative Easy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think that this amendment only addresses a small part of what I think is a flaw in Section 1. You know, there are many other aspects here that we haven't talked about. And a lot of them are very simple, like kids with under joint custody agreements, kids who are visiting non-custodial parents, and just a simple case of people who don't have control of their kids. Are we really trying to, I mean, you can't get blood from a turnip, so I mean, there's no point in suing somebody that is indigent, but I think Section 1 still leaves a lot to be desired. Thank you.
Other discussion? Representative Robinson, have you had a chance to read anybody on the amendment, further discussion? The amendment has been moved. Becky, would you take the vote, please?
There's no objection, was there?
Well,
I'm. No, I didn't.
Representative Davis?
Yes.
Representative Bryce?
Yes.
Representative Robinson?
Yes.
Yes. Representative Bundy?
Yes.
Representative Beasy?
Yes.
Okay, we have adopted amendment number one. We have House Bill 205 as amended before us. Further discussion on 205. Representative Bryce.
If there's no further discussion, I would move HB 205.
Just a moment, Representative Bryce. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on HB 205? Hearing none, we'll close public testimony. Representative Bryce.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 205, or CS for House Bill 205, considering we did amend it. As amended with accompanying fiscal notes.
Seven to be exact.
Seven to be exact, with individual recommendations.
Objections. There has been an objection. Could we have the vote, please?
Representative Bryce?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Representative Tui?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
House Bill 205 has passed from the HES Committee. Thank you, Ms. Knuth, for your...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Committee.
Yep.
Thanks, Margo.
Well, we are on the roll today.
Oh, we are on the roll.
Just move and ask unanimous consent that the rest of the calendar... never mind. This brings us to HB 281, HFC transfers. Somewhere I lost my point.
That's the case. Let's move her.
And Dan Spouse is here from HFC. Would you join us, please?
Excuse me?
Would you join us at the with the stand, please? We have heard this bill once before. Let me get my information straight here. And I had proposed an amendment, and I had withheld the bill so you had a chance to look at the amendment. Would you care to speak to the proposed amendment?
If I may. My name for the record is Dan Fowski, and I'm CEO of HFC. It's my understanding that the amendment would pretty much eliminate, was it Section 3 on the ratification? And the problem I have with that is in negotiations with the rating agencies to try and get the corporation number one taken off credit watch was that they wanted to see some type of agreement where some form of agreed upon legislation was in existence that they could see what the transfers out of the corporation would be on a regular basis over a period of time so that they could protect, in their case, to protect the bondholders. Without that kind of language, we run the risk then that they will not honor the agreement as it was seen as far as the reference to transferring monies out of the corporation. We'll probably place the corporation back on credit watch with negative implications, and subsequent to that, any future bond sales or current bond ratings are probably and most likely would go down, depending at what level the monies were taken from the corporation. So that is my concern, and it's not so much a case of being told what to do by folks on the East Coast. It's kind of looking ahead in time after you've already sold the bonds. So the bonds were sold, rating was maintained based on the financial stability and strength of the corporation. And if that is weakened, then the rating agencies have a fiduciary responsibility to notify their bondholders of potential problem with the credit. So the strength of the transfer bill is based on the fact of some agreement between the legislature and administration and the corporation.
I understand that, and my impetus for offering the amendment had nothing to do with some antagonism by someone back east trying to tell us what to do, at least not in this case. Surely these people are aware that this is a very hollow assurance that next legislative session we could repeal this entire bill or that section of the bill if we chose to. The reason I'm offering it is I think it gives, if they're not aware, they ought to be aware, a very hollow assurance, and that I don't feel that taking Section 3 out automatically indicates at least no impetus on my part to continue to drain capital reserves from AHFC. It's just, I mean, to me, it's eyewash that it's a meaningless part of the deal. Representative, I just wanted some assurance that I wasn't doing this to be, you know, because I had my hackles up or something. Representative
Veazey, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would point out that one of the things that this bill does, and we cannot change the law without the governor's signature or a veto override, so if we do pass it, why, it is difficult to change it, more difficult to change it than it is just to initially pass a law. But this bill does provide what I believe most courts would interpret as the pledge of the full faith and credit of the state of Alaska for those bonds, which is more than they have now. That is a subject of debate in and of its own. You could do that without any other provisions. And if the state of Alaska puts its full faith and credit behind those bonds, I would imagine that the financial managers back in the East Coast would probably care less what we did to HFC as long as we're guaranteeing the bonds with a permanent fund. So there are many other aspects to this bill.
Not being a bond attorney, I think any of these quasi-governmental agencies that issue bonds, the full faith and credit of the state is there if it ever went to court. Some people like to dot the I's and cross the T's and feel more comfortable if that's the case. But Representative Veazey.
Mr. Chairman, I can assure you if that was the case, the bond rating companies would not be the least bit concerned.
Let me acknowledge the presence of Representative Roachberg and then back to Mr. Fauske.
On that point, HFC is the only housing finance corporation in the United States that has its own GO rating. And that's a very significant piece of information because there is no other that has that. And because of that, it's based primarily on the fact that it is a standalone corporation and that the credit is based on the full faith and credit of the corporation. If the legislature or some other body were to take significant act that impaired the ability of the corporation to service its debt, any number of things could happen. One can only guess as to legal activity. And I'm not trying to get into that discussion, but it is a full faith and credit of the corporation. What we're asking to do here is that there's some agreement with the legislature that the legislature won't impair the corporation's ability to service its debt. It's also in the spirit of the language that there's an attitude that the corporation can't be utilized in full force to solve all of the fiscal problems of the state, if you will, and that we've arrived at what seems to be a reasonable amount of money based on some technical analysis as to fund equity balances of the corporation that meet with the guidelines established to maintain the bond rating that we currently enjoy, which is translated into some low mortgage interest rates for the residents of this state. Now, that bond rating is a direct result of risk, and the higher your rating, the lower the risk. And in retrospect, if you go the other way, the interest rates go up.
I don't disagree, and I don't disagree with the proposal the bill has laid out as a reasonable withdrawal of dividends, if you will, from HFC. I guess I would say, though, that regarding the full faith credit of the state, if the legislature, and I certainly don't advocate that, chose to dissolve the corporation, we would take on their debts and their responsibilities. Representative Bryce?
Yes, Mr. Chair, but I think that's true with any other bonding agency that's a quasi-governmental entity that's under us. And we've been able to maintain a substantially high bonding rating because we have established through past history that we're willing to take those golden eggs and stow them away for an appropriate manner. And I think that's what Section 3 is just intending.
Well, I think, as you point out, we have done that in the past, and we've done it without Section 3. Other discussion of the amendment that we'll call to section number 3, I'll call amendment number 1. Representative Roachberg.
Just, Mr. Chairman, I think that there needs to be some teeth in some of these things, so I'm going to vote against it.
Other discussion. The amendment was moved last meeting with that. Do I assume there's an objection to the amendment?
Yes.
Would you take the vote, please, Becky?
Representative Roachberg?
No.
Representative Robinson? Representative Bryce?
No.
Representative Robinson?
No.
Representative Toohey?
No.
That's okay.
Representative Bundy?
Yes.
Representative
Yes.
Representative Davis?
No.
Amendment number one does not pass the. And further discussion of House Bill 281.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Roper.
I have another amendment here.
An amendment? Representative Roper, would you like to move your amendment? We'll call this amendment number two.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move amendment number two.
And I'll object, for discussion purposes. Speak to your amendment, please.
Mr. Chairman, this amendment modifies the title and deletes section number four, which provides the bonding authority to provide the $30 million. And the reason I'm bringing this amendment is that, number one, I consider this particular provision a out-and-out blatant raid on the equity of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. And this is not even a subterfuge. It's just a reaching in the pocket directly of the equity of the corporation for a particular special purpose. And I don't think that is the right thing to do. I think it's very poor public policy. And also I'm concerned about the creditworthiness of Alaska Housing and their ability to maintain their creditworthiness and their bond rating. Number three, I think the university system and all the school systems of the state should be able to provide the repair and maintenance of their physical plants within their operating budgets and not look for special appropriations to do so. I appreciate the situation, the plight they find themselves in, but this is like one section of our state raiding the wealth of another section here, and they're not related. If we want to bond the repair and maintenance of the university system, we got to step up to the plate and do that with a GO bond that goes before the vote of the people. And therefore, that's why I'm offering this amendment, and I hope I can get support of this committee.
Representative Toohey.
Yeah, a question to Representative Roper. Other than what we're doing now, what's the difference between taking $200 million like we did last year from the housing AHFC and putting in the general fund? What's the difference between that and this, other than this as a purpose?
You mean the bill or my amendment?
No, the bill.
Oh, the bill has a, as I understand it, a incremental
purpose.
The purpose of the $270 million appropriation is to give an annual dividend that's predictable to the state's general fund, at which the legislature can do whatever it wishes to do. And I support that because I think that's a sustainable type of a dividend. Like the real estate community of the state supports that. And I think that provides a stability. But my amendment here is offered to further avoid any major raids upon the equity of the corporation, which I don't think is the right possible purpose. If we wish to do the repair and maintenance to the university with bonding money, we ought to go to the voters and ask them for their permission. That's my point.
Mr. Fosky, would you, I know you just got the amendment, but could you react to it, please?
Well, Representative Roberg's questions or statement is certainly a separate issue in terms of how to go about this. In this particular case, and I'm not here to discuss the merits of going to the people or not. This is a GO obligation of the corporation that falls within the parameters of the corporation based on the merger of 1992. This would have come under the old ASHA, and help me if I'm wrong, but it was repair and replacement of facilities that used to be one of the functions of ASHA. So that gave the mechanism whereby we're operating within the overall umbrella of the corporate activities in doing this. And at the beginning of this session, when I first started in March, getting here somewhat late, but there was a great deal of activity going on as to various fundings for the university, and this program became part of the process to help eliminate the overall deteriorating maintenance on the university campuses. This agreement has been discussed with the rating agencies, and at this level, they have considered this $30 million GO obligation as well as the withdrawal from the corporation. So it falls within the parameters of what we're doing. It falls within the perusal of the rating agencies and what they've been told we're trying to do. It does not address the question that Mr. Roberg, of course, has asked.
Representative Bryce and then Roberg.
Thank you. Unlike your amendment, Mr. Chair, that that attempted or was to address a specific concern, I think the current amendment before us is probably eviscerating the whole intent of the legislation and would probably be considered dilatory in that that sense. We might want to consider some type of action on that point, but on the other point, I do believe that when we're talking about the discussion of the AHFC and its corporations, or AHFC's corporations bonding authority, I think we need to discuss establishing also whether or not we feel that it's appropriate for this corporation to to be used to adequately fund our maintenance operations at our university, our deferred maintenance operations in our university. And I do believe that considering the debate that's been taking place over the past 2 years relating to this issue, I haven't heard any realtors complain about it. I haven't heard anybody argue about it, and I've also not heard AHFC get concerned over their bonding rating, as we've had testimony stating that the bill as is protects the corporation's bonding authority. So with that, I would oppose the amendment.
Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, hey, I was just going to ask Mr. Fauske, given the language in the Section 4 of this bill, would not the payment of the principal interest be a drawdown on the retained earnings and other resources of the corporation?
Yes, in that it's coming from corporate receipts. It's not a revenue bond per se because it's a GO bond.
Mr. Chairman, to follow up on that, therefore any retained earnings or profits, if you will, are generated by the lending activities throughout the state. In other words, the homeowner is paying their mortgage checks to their servicing agent, to the Alaska Housing, as the underwriter of their mortgage, are going to finance this bigger bond issue. Is that correct?
Yeah, following that paper trail, that's correct. I mean, based on the fact that the corporation is a profit-making corporation and profits are derived from repayment on mortgages, investment earnings, other mechanisms, yes, there is money coming into the corporation. The profits are then being utilized as a financial strength to support this bond credit.
I think it's kind of like a, Mr. Chairman, I think it's like a phantom tax. But just one final question. Actually, I'm not going to ask Mr. Fauske this question because he works for the governor. And I wouldn't want to put him on the hot seat. I'm not going to ask him whether he thinks this is a good use of that money or not. I'm not going to ask him this question. Because the governor introduced this bill, so I'm not going to ask him that question.
Representative Roberg, we have not hesitated to do that to anyone else. I don't know why we'd make an exception now. But I understand your deference. Further discussion of House Bill 281. Do we have anyone else here that would like to testify on House Bill 281? We'll close public testimony, and I'll ask the wishes of the committee.
I'd like to move this bill onto its next committee.
Mr. Chairman, we have an amendment on this thing.
Oh,
we do.
There may have been something subconscious.
Nice try.
There's no objections.
It was never moved.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. Yeah, we have an amendment. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. We have an amendment. We have an objection. And Becky, would you please take
it? We have a motion. All at once.
Representative Robinson?
Yes. No. I'm sorry.
Who knows?
Representative Toohey?
No.
Representative Bundy?
No.
Representative Mabuse?
No.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Roper?
Yes.
Representative Bryce?
No.
Amendment number 2 has failed.
That was smashing amendment.
Representative Veazey?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I was curious if somebody knows why I was expecting to see a schedule of transfers of capital in this bill. Maybe I'm confused. Maybe that's coming in another bill or
appropriation bill.
I was expecting to see a five-year commitment.
If I may, I believe that appears in the agreement between the Commissioner of Revenue and the corporation, which is based on this legislation. But you certainly, I thought you had, yeah.
We have copies of it.
It's not. There. Thank you.
It's adopted by reference, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Tui.
We look a lot.
Easy. Yeah. Since she starts you in Copenhagen, you look a lot alike. I've got her concealed weapon now, and I'm not worried.
I would note that the sponsor of this bill is a real optimist. You'll note the May 1st, 1995 effective date.
It has something to do with our adjournment plan, I'm not sure. Further discussion, 281. Hearing none, what's the pleasure of the committee? Representative Rice.
I would move HB 281 with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Are there objections? Hearing none, 281 is moved from the HES committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll let you have a private conversation with Representative Roper.
I'm sure we will have that.
No, I didn't have seen this one. Nope, I do not want to.
No, I.
I can understand that.
It's a very. And should it.
Okay.
1 minute and we'll move on. That brings us to House Bill 282. Call for the vote.
Yes.
Financing and repair of UA buildings, the new amendment that doesn't allow the money to be spent north of the Alaskan Range.
This year.
Mrs. Redmond, now, did you care to be available for questions? Questions for Mrs. Redmond. Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Redmond, could you tell me, this is the third bill, I believe, that's come before us, is that correct? Could you tell me the total amount of bonded indebtedness that we were being asked to authorize for the University of Alaska this session?
Mr. Chairman, there are two bills. One is for $30 million, which you just passed out, which is just for student housing. In addition to that, we have an additional now $120 million of additional deferred maintenance. What this bill does is to authorize AHFC to issue bonds for in the amount of $45 million with a delayed effective date of July 1st, 1996, if cash is not available next year for deferred maintenance. This would not draw down on the AHFC reserves to pay off this debt. This would come from the Alaska Debt Retirement Fund, is the way the bill is written. AHFC would simply be used as the bond issuer.
I observe that if the Easter Bunny comes next year, we won't need these bonds.
Yes.
Representative Roper?
Mr. Chairman, the Senate's taking care of this. Just kill the Eastern Bunny if we're not careful.
Truly the dark side.
Write that down, Jared.
All right. Is there anyone here that would like to testify on House Bill 282? Hearing none, we will close public testimony. Further discussion in the committee. Representative Roper?
Chairman, I'm going to vote against this for the same reason I bought the amendment before. I mean, by my reckoning here, we've authorized $111.5 million of new construction and maintenance bonds for the university in the last couple of days out of this committee. I mean, this is another $45 million. It's like one of my former clients, Bunker Hunt, used to say, a billion here, a billion there, a million here, a million there. I mean, this is, I know the toughest thing in the world to say is no, but I think we should say no to this, this bill.
Representative Robinson.
So how much did you say we just?
$111.5 million.
Let me ask a question. Ms. Redmond, I think it's more like 30 or something.
Mr. Chairman, I think what Representative Rochberg is referring to is that this committee did pass out a straight revenue bond proposal for new housing facilities, which, again, is using AHFC, but generating the revenues from the dorm projects will go to pay that bonded indebtedness off with a small subsidy from AHFC, which would be the interest rate subsidy of about $1 million a year.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Rochberg,
may I ask Ms. Redmond, with the interest rate on that bond, in terms of the interest subsidy, are you saying? I've heard statements that bond would be at a rate of 3%. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
Is that what the interest rate subsidy is then? The spread between the cost of their money and what that 3% is?
Yes, that is correct.
And I'd venture to say I'm not sure what their bond. The last bond went out, but I would venture to say it's probably over 7%, even though it's a tax-free bond. Mr. Howe is here. You might be able to tell me.
I don't have that exact number, but it's approximately that.
About 7%. So there's a 400 basis point spread differential in the $36 million. Gee, I forgot my calculator. Thank you.
Representative
Beasley. You've lost me.
Oh, Representative Tooley.
Tooley.
Tooley, Tooley.
Yeah, Tooley. Representative Rochberg. You've lost me, and if you want to bring me along by speaking above my head, go ahead. But the way the bill stands now, I can read it, and I'm going to vote for it. But if you have a concern, then you need to talk to it and explain to me what your concern is. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to try to explain it.
Yeah. Go right ahead.
I will hazard the duty of interpreting. He's concerned about we're spending a lot of money.
Oh, I realize that. Thank you.
Oh, and also the fact is that on the prior bond issue of 36.5, that subsidy is substantial every year over the years. I don't have exact numbers. I can figure it out. But there's Alaska Housing out of their equity there again. Their earnings are subsidizing those housing bonds that we already agreed to and passed out of here, which I even hope they pass. I think that's something that's really needed. Juneau and Ketchikan and Anchorage. But what we're doing is adding to that whole situation by just moving out the $30 million bond issue, which is entirely paid for by Alaska Housing. Not one sou, not one penny, is being paid for by the university system. Not a cent. And then now we're coming here for another $45 million. And apparently this is going to be the debt service is going to be paid for by us. And all this totality of all this at one time, I just think is too much. I mean, if we're going to let the $30 million go, you're going to have trouble spending $30 million on a good maintenance program in 1 year. So why give another $45 million right now? I mean, there's even a circuit breaker in this bill for a $20 million offset. So, this is more than the capital budget we're even contemplating.
Representative Beasley.
Several comments, Mr. Chairman. Of course, this money wouldn't be spent in 1 year, but wouldn't be that hard to do. I could help you. You have to remember that the university here is, as I recall lectures I've been given, the deferred maintenance is growing at 20 million a year, and they really haven't even looked at their total facilities. It's just the ones that have roofs that they're looking at. So there is a huge backlog of major maintenance, which is really new construction or reconstruction. But also, I did have another question on a slightly different angle, and why Ms. Redmond is here, I'd like to ask, what role is private housing currently playing in the university's housing needs?
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Veazey, we've investigated that option both in Anchorage, Fairbanks, actually in Juneau. We let out a bid here to see if there was anyone in the private sector who was interested. We got a bill passed last year with your help, which allowed us to offer a tax-exempt status to private people who came on to our property to build. With that bill, we went out and sought people to come in, and we have not been successful in getting anybody interested in it at this point.
If I may continue, what about off-campus housing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Veazey, you mean having private people build facilities for the university off
don't
of our
you,
property?
Don't you currently have students staying off campus in private facilities?
Yes, we do, but it's really, it's not, the university doesn't support that housing. It's just a lot of students that are trying to live in the communities. We don't have a relationship for a lot of legal reasons with those providers.
But what need is that filling? I mean, what is how much of the university's housing need is that fulfilling?
It varies in each community. In Juneau, it's most of the students are still living off campus. In Anchorage, the huge majority of the students are living off campus. Probably 95% of the students are in the community. In Fairbanks, it's about 40% of the students are living off campus, 30 to 40%. Is that what you're getting?
Yeah, I would point out that in our, and we're getting off the topic, but our previous discussion about the validity of student housing in Anchorage, you can't get private people to do it. It cannot and will not pay for itself, so we subsidize it at the 3%. I still think it'll fail, but I'm willing to be proven wrong. Representative Bryce.
Yes, and with reference to the concern that all these bonds will be let at once, that's the beauty of bonding versus straight GF capital money, is that straight GF capital money has to be spent within 3 years. Bonding authorization lasts a little bit longer, and we don't superheat the economy in Anchorage, Juneau, or wherever these projects are taking place, and they can be let at, in smaller amounts to allow for local contractors to do the work, as well as not providing, you know, all of a sudden a big plethora of work to attract Seattle firms and Los Angeles firms or whoever else to come up. So I think that's the beauty that we have within the bonding proposal that's being put before us.
Let me just try to wrap up.
Sure.
I think by passing this large number of issues, we're almost rewarding the mischief of the mismanagement of the university system. I mean, I think they should have put their house in order. I know they're trying to now. But, you know, and I know they need some help. I'm not saying we shouldn't pass some of these bond issues, but let's look at the whole scope of things. We just moved $30 million out of this committee. We need another $45 million. I suggest that we don't. I mean, I'm an incrementalist by heart here. I think $30 million is a good start.
Particularly that it falls south of the Alaska Range.
Right.
Well, I would just observe that this information goes to the Finance Committee. I don't know, I don't have any information that would lead me to believe that they won't pick and choose as to what goes out of the Finance Committee. I don't know that it will all go out, and I will be willing to give them the option. So, Representative Bryce.
With that, if there's no further discussion, I'd like to make a motion to move House Bill 282 with accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
There is an objection. We will have a vote. Becky?
Representative
Coon?
Yes.
Representative
Bundy? Yes.
Representative Veazey?
Yes.
Representative Davis?
Yes.
Representative Roper?
No.
Representative Bryce?
Yes.
Representative Robinson?
Yes.
House Bill 282 has moved from the HES Committee. That brings us to SB 88, Charter School Program, and we do have a number of folks on teleconference. We have Senator Sharp with us. Senator Sharp, would you join us, please?
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to present this bill to the committee. The issue of charter schools was discussed at length during the 2 years of the 18th legislature. For those of you that was in the HES committee, and I had that fortune or misfortune for 2 years on the Senate side last year, and it was just one small part of the Alaska 2000 propositions in the Senate anyway. It was in two bills, SB 60 and 61. I think they had companion bills in the House, as I recall. Those two bills, which in all aspects were omnibus education bills. The bills tried to address diverse issues, each of which were controversial in some way. Each issue tainted the other one with their detractors, which led to the situation that none of them passed. I've tried to craft SB 88 to be a single issue bill on charter schools, which was an item in SB 61 over there. This bill allows school districts, teachers, and parents the space to be creative. It allows the charter schools to utilize existing schools, facilities, new facilities, and or the option of leasing adequate facilities that's in the private, owned by private enterprise in the community. A geographical allocation has been done to assure fairness statewide in that one area doesn't come in and take up the total allocated 300 or 330. There's 30 suggested for the pilot program that lasts up until the year 2005, and it sunsets at that time. The allocation is pretty straightforward in the second page of the bill. All charter school proposals must be submitted to the local school board for consideration. Upon their approval by the school board, they then must be forwarded to the commissioner of the Department of Education for review and compliance to state law. All staffing of charter schools must be done on a volunteer basis, with the principal or administrator of that school, charter school, having the right of final approval of all staff selection. Section 3, funding for charter schools, Section A of 3, a local school board shall provide an approved charter school with an annual program budget. The budget shall be not less than the amount generated by the students enrolled in the charter school, less the school district's administrative costs retained by the local school district on the average that's determined in the same manner that it would be allowed by the Department of Education. The amount generated by students enrolled in charter schools is to be determined in the same manner as it would be for a student enrolled in any other school within the school district. And no more or no less funding would be available to the school district. It's just an option that could be considered by the school board upon presentation of a proposal. You know, the exciting thing about it is it offers, I think, an opportunity to get parents involved with teachers on something that may bring them together on a more focused in a more focused atmosphere for education. I know there has been areas in the states, particularly in Wisconsin and New Jersey, that have found that it worked exceptionally well. Primarily those areas, the charter school proposals were made for the existing school buildings within the district, normally the older ones, and they incorporated the charter school concept in there with the parents and the teachers who volunteer for that, so their enthusiasm is a lot higher and more focused on the whatever the agenda and the focus of that particular charter school would be. I found an interesting paragraph that reads, "This administration will work to free local districts from regulations and mandates which restrict parents and educators from exploring innovation." Governor Tony Knowles' State of the State message this January. And I think it's a good challenge. And I think that the situation in our community, I know our school district is the one that requested that we really try to get this done. They think there's some opportunities there. There are, as you look through the bill, there are definitely restrictions on what is allowed. The school board has total control. It's got to be non-sectarian in nature and meet all other state laws as overseen by the Commissioner of Education. I'll point out also, upon winding up here, that the Fairbanks North Star School Board letter in here of support, the Department of Education letter that notes that the State Board of Education at their last meeting voted unanimously in support of this concept, SB 88, and there's a few others in here that have come forward with some words of encouragement. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll sum it up. There's a very small fiscal note from the Department of $2,000 for taking care of sending the information back forth and back and forth between the school districts if the activity is there, and to cover forms and so forth that they may require to be processed.
Representative Toohey had a question.
Thank you, Senator Sharp. I have a couple of questions. One, it's not a question, it's just a statement. I'm really concerned that our schools are going down in value. They're going down in teaching ability. They're going down in everything that we know of. I've always said that I don't want to detract from that by doing something like this, and that's my fear, is that we're going to take and put charter schools out there that, granted, will graduate, parents put their kids in there because they're motivated and they have the backing of the parents, and I think it's great, but I fear that it's going to jeopardize the school, the lousy school system that we are, or the lousy students, most of them, that we're producing now. And they're not all that lousy, I realize that, but we are deteriorating.
Yeah, I know, that's a concern. But I think the opportunity of stimulating parents and teachers, it's amazing. Most of the interest in our community comes from the teachers that want to be involved in a school that they can really have a little more freedom and challenge the kids as well as themselves without the total regimentation of what applies school-wide. You'll notice the aspects of the bill allows the school boards to relax some of the textbooks requirements and as long as they meet the state standards for education. But yeah, I think the other way, if we don't do some experimentation and chance for innovation and try to see what works, I think the system's doomed eventually. Doomed in the fact that we're sinking, at least the perception is. Now, we all have a different situation. I think my grandkids got some of the best schools going up there, but some of the teachers are really committed in that particular school, too, and a lot of them would like to be involved and be challenged somewhere else as they get into their 15, 18 years down the road in their career. They'd like a chance to see if something else might work a little better. And maybe this is the opportunity.
Question. In Section 1 of the bill, it says not more than 10 schools in Anchorage. Does anybody here from Anchorage tell me how many charter schools are here now? And is this retroactive, or is this in toto in Anchorage within the Anchorage School District?
We have someone, and you're signed up to testify. Yeah, well, you can
May
get your address.
The
mic will pick it up, so we'll get your testimony later, okay?
I know Anchorage is the only community that I'm aware of that has pursued this as I don't know if they call it magnet schools or what you call it there, but they have created schools that are more focused than others, and it's seemed to have worked well in different in most of the comments I've heard is it works well. I think this encourages other school districts to consider it. There's a lot of reservation, and especially in our school district, that they don't think that they won't have the power to do this. And maybe this goes a little bit farther in what they can relax as far as regimentation and then what they have now. I don't know. I don't know what Anchorage has, but I have heard good things about some of the efforts they've made. But, I think it's geographically basically apportioned out so that one area couldn't come in like and take all the options from the Bush area, for instance, that might want four or five schools. Anyway.
Thank you. I think they're calling alternative school
question of a sponsor
in Anchorage. I know they have the polar one, and it's very loose. They let the students vote, and so their academic focus for January was cross-country skiing. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was the focus of my question to Senator Sharp. Are you aware of any charter schools in the state that meet this criteria that you're establishing here?
I'm not, personally. I really am not. I just know that but there is excitement out there, we've incorporated some fine-tuning by everyone that testified over the other body, that wherever it is over there, and accommodated them to the best of our ability without making the bill. We felt too slanted one way or the other, and it's a tightrope. It's a real tightrope to walk, I'll tell you.
A question, just off, totally off the subject. We call you guys the dark side. I want to know what you call us.
Idiots.
Maybe we better not.
Hey, what can I say?
I'll get some names.
For 4 years. It's a lot more stimulating.
We have we have a number of people on teleconference. I would like to get to them before we go to further questions. Senator Sharp, you're going to be able to stay with us for a little while.
If they let me out of finance, I'm out of there right now, and if they don't need me for any votes, I will be glad to stick around.
If they collect you, we understand.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we do have in Matt Sue, Christine Kassler on teleconference. Would you go ahead with your testimony, please?
Are demanding. Senate Bill 88 can bring about real hope and change for, in education for everyone. I urge you please to pass on Senate Bill 88 so that we can get on with making education exciting for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll then go on to, if I can, oh, Gus Davis. And Kathy Funt, please.
Feedback.
This is Kathy Funt and Gus Davis. I'd like to speak out for the bill. It sounds like a great idea to me. The idea of site-based management is a fairly new one, and it involves parents and community members. And when parents and community members are involved in their school, I think that's where a lot of the power lies, is with the parents, to get them involved and accountable and with a sense of ownership of really taking part in the school would be nothing but beneficial for the kids. They would see their parents involved. It would be, I think, just a real, real positive experience. And I'd like to see Senate Bill 88 go forward. Let's give it a try. Thank you.
Thank you. Could I ask a question, please? I assume there's only one school in Gus Davis.
Yes, and we're wondering about that. There are four of us here, and we each have questions. We're wondering what happens in a small single-site community if there's a charter school started. What about people that might move in and might not like the idea, or what kind of problems might arise with that?
Yeah, you've addressed my question exactly. We talk about options and choices, and obviously if you start a charter school where only one school exists, the people that aren't inclined to be part of that charter school don't have a choice. I don't see the state coming in to set up another school. So it's something to, in your deliberations, to keep in mind, I would guess.
Yes, thank you. We have other people to speak here.
You do. Go ahead, please.
My name is Annie Mastoliak, and I would like to speak in favor of charter schools. I believe this bill provides a welcome alternative to the now existing public schools, but still within the public school framework. It would allow a school to pursue innovative teaching techniques, or even to apply old ones, such as Montessori methods. It would allow high schools to border on certain specific goals. As evidence, my husband is from Cleveland, and there was Cleveland Aviation High School. It could also center around science or business, vocational skills, music or art. I would caution that it be very clear that any reason for forming a charter school would be based solely on educational motives, however. As our state grows, I feel we should be broadening our educational opportunities, and I see the existence of charter schools as one way to accomplish that. Thank you.
Thank you, and I guess I'd ask the same question. If a group of parents in Gus Davis decided they wanted an agricultural-based school, and the rest of you would like to have a fishing-based school, what happens? Does majority rule?
I don't have an answer for that. I'm supporting this statewide and not particularly for my community, because I do see it as a problem in a real small rural area where you already have an existing public school, and I think it would be real difficult to start a charter school as an alternative, although it's not impossible, but it's something to be thinking about.
Sure, I'm being devil's advocate here. So Representative Toohey has a question.
I have a question of Senator Sharp.
Senator, could we ask you to come back?
Yes.
If can you answer that question that was posed from Gus Davis? And is there a limit on the number of students you have to have? You can have.
There's no limit. The bill is fairly loosely structured to allow as much space as possible for the school board and the people that want to make a proposal. The situation is that the school board, I think any reasonable school board would make sure that the economics are there, that two schools could function within a small school district if there was only one other one. If not, I would assume they would not let it go through. If there's a school, an REAA or whatever, and they want one school in their various area that has a good proposal and allow them to try it, I think that probably wouldn't destroy economics because you're operating in separate little towns or villages. And I didn't hear all that she said. I heard the question from the chairman, but I didn't.
Well, it was just a small student body. What happens if there isn't room for two schools and one group of parents wants to establish something and then new people come in, they don't have options.
I would point out, I think that the minimum in state law for establishing a school now are 8 students. The former commissioner was trying to raise that to 10. I think that there's somewhere down the line we will be looking at these small schools and wondering if they will stay open at all. And so if you've got a student body of 16 and they divide into 2 schools, are they then subject to closure?
Yeah, I would assume that the economics of having instructors in both of them would not allow the school board to even allow it, because in that small of a school.
We're saying the school board will make good economic decisions. Representative Tui, you still?
This has a 10-year trial date. Mm-hmm. We're not looking at a whole lifetime.
Right. Assuming it takes a year or two for anyone even to get their act together and get reasonable proposals in and considered at the local school board, I would, and the maximum contract can only be for 5 years with a possible extension, but not to exceed the 10 years down the road from the effective date of the bill. So it's strictly a limited pilot project scattered all statewide.
Representative Veazey, question. Representative Roper?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sharp, on page 4 in section 5, it talks about teachers and employment, you know, agreements and so forth. Just 2 questions here. Number one, is there any requirement for certified teachers, or are the teachers to be recruited from within the district, or where are we getting these teachers?
Section 5, page 4.
That's kind of your labor law section.
Excuse me for interrupting, but I believe these, all the same regulations that apply to the other public schools apply to this, because these are simply a facet of the public school, so you have to have certified teachers and all that sort of thing.
Item B,
you're right, and then follow up on that non-question, I guess. was there, it provides for an exemption there?
The school board, if they have collective bargaining agreements, the existing structure of that agreement, the school board has to abide by it. And this would not allow them to circumvent any agreements that they have. But the proposal put forward to the school board for a charter school will, in all likelihood, nominate a principal to be in charge of that school the group wants in charge. And that person has the right, final right of selection of the staff of that school. And no teacher can be forced against their will. It has to be voluntary assignment to that. And the
I'm more concerned about Aunt Gertrude down the street here. I mean, are they going to create a position for her here? Or also, can we have a mix between exempt and non-exempt teachers?
I don't think they're going to have any exempt teachers.
Well, it says exempt. They can be exempt if you have an agreement between a district and a bargaining unit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Then you can have exempt people. So can you have a mix of exempt and non-exempt?
I guess I'm not following you where you're reading
that's
this.
That's so with line 2021 of section 5, page 4. Let the district and the bargaining representative teacher agree.
You could have both, as long as there's agreement between the
So you could you could hire Aunt Gertrude, but only if she's certified, is that?
That's right. And they have to be certified teachers according to state regulations.
I would like to go back to the teleconference and try to finish up these folks before we go to further discussion, if we could. Gustavus, have we gotten everyone that wanted to testify there?
I have at least one more question. My name is Lynn Jensen, and one of the questions we had is more of a general one. What recourse would applicants have if they were denied the opportunity to become a charter school by their regional board? Or is that the end? They have a recourse?
Let me refer that to the bill sponsor, Senator Sharp.
At the present time, it was the consensus in, as a committees that went through in the Senate, that the school board at that for that area should have total responsibility to avoid any problems with fragmenting the community and the school system as such. The school board is elected and responsible for all schools in that district, and they will. We do not want to isolate charter schools from that responsibility.
All right, thank you. We'll move on now to Fairbanks. David Kornberg.
Yes. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I would like to speak for Senate Bill 88 to encourage you to pass it on. I am an independent education consultant. I've been involved in education reform since the 60s, and charter schools, from my point of view, is yet another attempt to figure out how to do better with what we all have, basically, which is young people and older people trying to teach them. I'd like to make 3 points in favor of the bill. The first is that we don't have any hard and fast predictive models that tell us if you do something such and such today in 1995, then by 2001 or 2003, school performance will definitely be better. But we also don't know whether or not charter schools will not make a difference. So I think the important thing in passing this bill from the standpoint of reform is that we give it a chance. It hasn't been tried in the state, and I strongly urge that that we go ahead and try it. And in the course of doing so, we will probably refine Senator Sharp's bill somewhat, but it's a good place to start. The second thing has to do with the Federal Charter Schools Initiative. There is a Charter Schools Initiative under the Improving America Schools Act, Public Law 103-382. That initiative is currently funded at $6 million. I spoke with John Fiegel today in Washington, D.C., who is a contact person. He said the president has requested $20 million for next year and may come out at something like $15 million. No school in a state that has no charter school legislation can apply. So as long as Alaska has no charter school legislation on the books, we cannot apply for that federal initiative. So I strongly urge that we get this bill into legislation and on the books. Let's refine it later, and let's get us into a position to apply next fall for some of that money to help fund charter school initiatives in the state. The third thing has to do with that question of dividing the community. I've lived in some very small communities, and I think that probably the best response is that, apart from the financial concern, 16 students, 8, and they're both out of business, but apart from that one, the question of choice is the same on all scales in this society. It's a democracy. In a second-class city that has 500 residents, there's only one mayor. People have to live with that. And so if a Democratic constituency decided for a charter school, the people would just have to live with it. It's a democracy all the way to the small community, and it's a democracy in education also. So I strongly urge you to pass this bill on, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Kornberg. I see no questions, so we'll move on to Anchorage. Catherine Portlock, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Catherine Portlock, and I live in District 18. I came here today to ask you to support Senate Bill 88 and work to pass it this year. Charter schools can provide models for improved education at no additional cost. There's overwhelming evidence that children have diverse learning styles and diverse educational needs. When a program is well suited for the child or allows for differences within the student body, students attend more and learn more. When parents are given appropriate choices for their children, they become more involved in their children's education, which leads to greater academic success and satisfaction with the system. Rather than bleeding resources from other programs, charter programs have breathed new life and new ideas into public schools across the country. Parents are there with their children rather than leaving education to the schools, or worse, taking their kids out of the public schools entirely. We don't often speak of teachers' needs, but certainly charter schools can welcome those who seek a different teaching philosophy or environment, or a larger role in designing education. When teachers feel they are valued and appropriately placed, they will be more effective and more committed. Public support of our school systems is eroding at the same time that funds are becoming more scarce. We are demanding proof of improvement in school performance, yet we are resistant to change. We need to provide tools for that change in a way for every child, parent, and teacher to feel that the school system is there for them. If that is true, educational success will follow naturally. I urge you to vote for charter schools and to provide a place at the educational table for every student. Thank you.
Thank you. And I see no questions. We'll move on, staying in Anchorage. Penny, is it Goodstein?
I'm testifying for a different bill. It's SB 58.
Oh, I'm sorry. We will be on there in a few minutes, I hope. So thank you for your patience. So that will conclude our teleconference. We do have folks here in Juneau to testify. And Carl Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. The association is on record in support of Senate Bill 88. Much of the testimony that has already been given pretty much substantiates the need. I would like to say that what we see in this bill is an opportunity for communities to become involved. The criteria is set forth. I think we empower our communities to address areas of need. If they satisfy criteria, they can put together a proposal, bring it before the local board. The local determination is made. Economics are examined, satisfying and compliance with laws and regulations are all taken into consideration. If an opportunity exists out there, perhaps the school district doesn't see it, but if a community member does identify it and can create that kind of a support and a program and proposal, I think it would be very encouraging. So what is contained in a bill, I think, meets all of our concerns. We see tremendous opportunity for creativity and enthusiasm and empowerment of the community, so we speak in favor of the bill. I'll answer any questions you might have.
Representative Toohey?
Do you know, thank you, Mr. Chairman, do you know how many schools in Anchorage, how many charter schools we have in Anchorage?
I think our next person to testify can answer that.
Okay.
I'm not familiar with how many exist in Anchorage right now.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Linda Sharp?
Relation to the sponsor?
No relation
okay.
at all.
My name is Linda Sharp, and it's a privilege to be here to speak to you today. I live in Anchorage. I have lived in Alaska since 1971. I was raised in North Dakota. I'm the parent of two children, one who is in her third year of being in a public school in Anchorage and one who will be eligible for public school next year. I would like to suggest to you that charter schools, as defined by Senator Sharp and the sponsors of the bill, are exactly what exists in Anchorage as alternative schools. They began in 1972 with Chugach, went on to Stellar, went on to the ABC program, then the Montessori, then an expansion of the Chugach kind of concepts, and then some language immersion programs. There are 13 such alternatives at the elementary level in Anchorage presently.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, may I please note, there is a teacher.
I just want to do a metaphor for you. If you would hold your hands like this, you don't have to do it, but just pretend you are. And inside of my arms are the desks, the kids, the teachers, and the money in any school district. Charter schools is not going to take any money and throw it outside of the district. It's not going to bring in kids from China or Afghanistan. This is who's in there, and this is what's staying. It's merely an innovation with what's there. It's merely suggesting to teachers, parents, community members to propose new innovations and raise your hand if you want to go to that end of the building. That's all it is. I went across the street to the State Library and I did just a little bit of research and I came up with a lot of things that said something like this: how do we stack up in education? If anybody wants copies of whatever I refer to, you're welcome to ask me afterwards. I also know that a man who just completed 2 years of service on the Anchorage School Board and as a member of the Hispanic community has been lobbying in favor, Joe Marks, of this. He believes that it will help the 20 to 30 schools in Anchorage that have very low scores. I have a list of the Anchorage School District elementary schools and their scores. The 30 lowest scoring schools are schools that have no program in them at all. They are the traditional programs that are not defined. All the alternative schools are well into the upper one half of the scores. I found Educational Digest, which had about 10 back issues. And it's basically a Reader's Digest, a compilation of articles from all over the country on educational issues. And most of them suggest that charter schools is the best solution, that vouchers and other ways of solving school challenges are not as good. My child just was accepted through the lottery system this year to an alternative program. We were at our neighborhood school, a traditional school, for 2 years. In Anchorage, the alternatives are so popular that they have long wait lists. In excess of 2,000 children are waiting for access, and most of their parents have to be fairly resourceful because they're not located in enough places yet around Anchorage, so you have to be able to drive twice a day on time to get and fetch your kid. The school that my child is attending is Government Hill School. For those of you that know Anchorage, it was the lowest on all of these test scores. The highest violence, the highest teacher turnover, the greatest dissatisfaction, the lowest test scores, you name it. All the indicators were at the bottom. 2 years ago, an alternative program came in, and now about 150 of us are driving across town to bring our children there. Not all the kids are in the program, but the $15,000 the PTA raised has gone for every teacher equally in the building. It has benefited every child. PTA meetings have 30 to 40 parents there. One parent is from the regular program. The rest are from the alternative program. We stand ready to serve any teacher in the building. If other teachers need assistance, we have said again and again at PTA meetings, ask us. We don't limit our resources to just the parent, the kids in the program. So I believe it's benefiting all the teachers and all the students at Anchorage's most needy school. I have an article, just a few pages out of an article. It's Newsweek, December 2nd, 1991, the 10 best schools in the world. basically, they've identified schools that have unified around a theme, a math school, a science school, an art school, or whatever. And they've said that they've identified the 10 best schools in the world. My point there is that when teachers choose where they want to go because of common themes, and when parents choose where they want to go because they like the theme and they support it, I think that when you have the teachers really excited about what they're doing and the parents unified behind the teachers, very few children will fail. I believe that we need these schools now. The indicators are down, and they're going down further. You've just awarded a number of school districts millions of dollars to fund new school construction. For example, in Anchorage, we have new schools and wings opening this year, and new schools and additional wings opening next year. It's a perfect time to have people raise their hand and move to this end of the school and not feel quite as badly that you're, you know, making somebody move out of their way, because you've got new sites coming on where people have not yet claimed the territory. The opposition to SB 88. On one side over here, I know I have acquaintances in Anchorage who plan to lobby you, and they said, no, we don't want this. We want vouchers. We're all tired of the system. Let's let the system topple and fail. We're tired of what's going on. Give us vouchers. And I know they've lobbied you.
The mic picks that. We appreciate your enthusiasm, but the secretary climbs out of her skin.
We now have to pay workers' comp for our secretary.
I'm sorry. Okay. I'll be more conservative. And then you have over here people who are worried that the best and the brightest will leave the public schools and go to the charter schools, which in fact will be public schools. I would suggest to you that the best and the brightest of the teachers are 80 to 90% of the teachers. Really and truly, there aren't that many bad public school teachers. They're in a very small minority. And teachers who choose to teach in a certain place because they really feel that's bringing out the best in them, their strengths and their talents, and they have a perfect chance to collaborate, will feel themselves challenged, as they are not when they don't have a partner or a collaborator. Likewise, as the school that I attend, if you were to come to Government Hill, and I invite you to come there, and look in my child's classroom, the color of my eyes and the color of my skin is in the minority in that classroom. The vast majority of children in that school are of other races and not Caucasian. If you were to see the parents who are driving their kids up to that hill because they like the program, some of them, their cars are falling apart, the mufflers are on the ground. Their children are being served well by that program, and they want it, and they're setting aside a lot to get there. This bill, like a Fairbanks author, Fred Pratt, said, is it just meekly challenges the status quo. This is not a huge, huge risk. This is a very small step. It's a five-year sunset. The school boards are in charge. The Alaska Department of Education's board is going to oversee it. It's not a radical change. It's not asking for money to start up. It's not asking for more money for the charter schools. Elaine Griffin, the teacher of the year from Kodiak, was just honored because she formed partnerships with the community. I think that this is really what we're asking for, is a chance for partnerships. When parents are asked to come and serve the art supplies and clean up the cookies, yeah, a few will. When parents are asked to be a permanent part of the table where curriculum and staffing issues are made, they're not going to leave. They're going to be there, and they're going to help to solve the problems you're going to see next year and the year after and the year after if you don't do something different. It needs more than a Band-Aid. People that are supporting this that I know of, and I confirmed it with the governor's staff if I could mention it, he has sent his children for 8 years to Anchorage's public alternative schools. Dr. Holloway has given me permission to share a letter she wrote with me saying that her Board of Education unanimously endorsed this. You heard from the executive director of the School Board Association. My conversations with the NEA and the Anchorage version of it is they don't mind the idea of charter schools. There are some superintendents and some school boards in the state who favor it, and parents and teachers favor it. I would just ask you to please reward the innovations and reward the risk takers and give people that have new ideas a chance to do it in the realm of public schools. Thank you.
Teacher, may I? Representative Davis has a question.
Mr. Chairman, I'm beginning to wonder why we need this legislation. There's 13 schools, charter schools in Anchorage, and we have an alternative school. If in fact, alternative schools equal charter schools, then why do we need this legislation?
Thank you very much. It's an excellent question. As I mentioned, this is a very small step in the right direction. It's not a huge, big step. It doesn't give money. It doesn't give major incentives. It merely gives the school boards a heads up to listen, pay attention, honor these proposals, and deal with them in an upfront way. When Anchorage has a superintendent who favors partnerships and choices, we get a new one every couple, 3 years. When we have a school board and a superintendent who are afraid because money is being cut back and they don't want to be perceived as spending money, even if they aren't, on new innovations, they will say no. We just had a Russian immersion program voted down at Bear Valley. The parents were asked 2 years ago by a school board to fundraise with the community the 15,000 startup. They did it. They came back. They had 67% of the parents at the school saying they wanted it. The superintendent and the school board said no. I asked them afterwards. I said, why? Why did you say no? They said, well, we were just in Juneau, and they warned us that, you know, we shouldn't be asking for more money. We're going to have our money cut back, and we didn't want to look bad as to approving new programs. It might look like we're spending more money. This gives them a heads up, a go ahead, try some innovations, we're behind you. It's a very small step.
I think you can rest comfortably assured that they will be asking for money in the future. Representative Tui.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not any more than anybody else is asking for money.
Or any more than the current system asks, but,
right.
But the demands will continue.
A question of the sponsor, Linda, unless somebody else is out there. Again, I'm saying, you're saying the alternative school is considered a charter school?
There is essentially very little, if any, difference between Anchorage's existing alternative programs and charters. What this does is it gives the superintendent and the school board a nod to
go ahead. If that's the case, and you say there are 13 charter schools in Anchorage, then you're three above your allotment now in Anchorage.
My understanding is that there would be no more than 10 new ones implemented.
That's not my understanding. My understanding, it says here, the State Board of Education may not approve more than 30 charter schools to operate in the state at any one time and shall approve charter schools in a geographically balanced manner as follows. Not more than 10 schools in Anchorage, not more than 5 in Fairbanks, so forth and so on.
That was not the intent. I've been in contact with the authors of this bill, and their intent is 30 new charter schools could be proposed and implemented as a result of this bill.
See if we can get some information from
Senator Sharp, you wouldn't take three away from us.
He had to go back to finance.
He had to go back, and we'll get the information.
I'm sure it wasn't his intent to take away three alternative schools.
Don't panic. Don't panic.
I see no further questions. Thank you, Linda. Well, we do have a couple more people to testify. Sheila Peterson from the Department of Ed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Sheila Peterson, Special Assistant to the Commissioner of Education. As Linda indicated, charter schools is very similar to an alternative. However, it is different. The charter school will set up a mechanism to formally approach the local school board with a charter between parents and teachers and the local school board. The charter will say what their educational objectives are and how they hope to accomplish them. It will also have more autonomy than an alternative school. A charter school will maintain their own financial operations, will keep track of their money, will have their own principal who will be overseeing their own teachers. The alternative schools that currently are in existence are not charter schools and so would not fall under the number that is outlined in the legislation. When the commissioner looked at this legislation, she applied her test, is this good for kids? And she came up with a definite yes. Charter schools isn't a good concept for kids. It will encourage parents, teachers, and communities to work together as an academic policy committee to form a charter school.